You know that moment when someone asks, "How are you?" and you realize you genuinely don't know how to answer anymore? Not because you're sad, but because you're not sure who you even are without them. If you're waking up and having to consciously remember who you are now, if you're standing in the grocery store frozen because you can't remember what you like to eat versus what you used to cook for two, if you're declining invitations because you don't know how to introduce yourself anymore without the story of we, you're not losing your mind. You're experiencing something profound that nobody prepared you for, the complete dismantling of an identity you spent years building. Maybe you're catching yourself saying we in conversations and then awkwardly correcting to I. Maybe you're keeping their side of the closet untouched while your own clothes sit in a crumpled pile because organizing your space feels like erasing them. Maybe you're maintaining routines that only made sense as part of a pair, making a full pot of coffee, setting two places at the table for a split second, or keeping up with their TV shows because stopping feels like another goodbye. Perhaps you've noticed you can't make simple decisions anymore. Which restaurant? What to do on Saturday? Should you keep the house? Everything feels weighted with impossible significance because every choice is now about defining who you are, alone. You've probably tried to push through it. You've told yourself to get back out there or find yourself again, as if there's some previous version of you waiting in storage. Maybe you've jumped into activities, new hobbies, groups, classes, hoping motion would create meaning. Perhaps you've tried journaling and the pages stayed mostly blank because you don't know what to say when you don't know who's saying it. You might have redecorated a room or two, moved some furniture, changed small things while keeping everything important exactly the same. Or maybe you've swung the other direction and changed everything frantically, only to feel unmoored, like you erased the foundation along with the pain. Well-meaning people have probably told you that you're still you, which somehow makes you feel worse because you know that's not quite true. The person you were before exists only in memory, and the person you were with them can't exist anymore. So who does that leave? Here's what I want you to know. You're not half a person trying to become whole again. You're not broken. You're standing in a structure that was designed for two people to inhabit together, and now you're learning that you need to be the architect of something different. Not smaller, not diminished, different, entirely yours. In this audio, I'm going to walk you through what I call the solo architecture method, a way of rebuilding your identity that doesn't ask you to erase the foundation of who you were together, but also doesn't entrap you in a half-lived life. You're going to learn why trying to find yourself again is actually making this harder and what to do instead. I'll show you the specific structure for making decisions when you've lost your reference point, and how to distinguish between honoring someone's memory and imprisoning yourself in it. You'll discover how to recognize which parts of your coupled identity were authentically yours, which were truly shared, and which were accommodations you no longer need to make. And most importantly, you'll learn how to design daily life, from the mundane to the meaningful, that feels like it fits someone, specifically you, rather than feeling like you're rattling around in a space built for different people. But this only works if you commit to hearing the whole framework. Your brain is going to want to skip ahead or dismiss parts that feel uncomfortable. That resistance is actually part of the architecture you need to examine. So I'm asking you, can you give yourself the next 30 minutes to listen completely, even when it challenges what you've been telling yourself about how this is supposed to work? If you can make that commitment, we can begin the real renovation. You've probably been told to find yourself again, or maybe a well-meaning friend suggested joining new groups, picking up hobbies, or even that it's time to get back out there. And look, that advice isn't wrong exactly, it's just incomplete. Here's why. Those suggestions assume your identity is something you misplaced, like keys you left somewhere that you just need to locate again. But that's not what happened. Your identity wasn't lost. It was structured around a shared existence. And when that structure disappeared, the entire architecture of who you are became unstable. Trying to find yourself without first understanding how your identity was constructed is like trying to hang pictures on walls that no longer exist. You're not working with what actually needs attention.
When most people give advice about moving forward after loss, they focus on filling time or distracting from pain. Join a book club, try meditation, travel somewhere new. And sure, these activities might help temporarily, but they're addressing symptoms, not the actual problem. The real issue isn't that you have empty hours to fill. It's that every single aspect of how you understood yourself was built in relationship to what you've lost. Your daily routines, your decision-making process, your sense of purpose, even how you introduce yourself to strangers. All of it was architected around something that no longer exists. So adding new activities into this broken structure is like throwing furniture into a house with a cracked foundation. It might look better for a moment, but nothing is actually stable. Here's what makes this even harder. The entire world around you is designed for coupled existence, or assumes everyone has their original support structures intact. Think about it. Social invitations come addressed to pairs. Restaurants seat you at tables sized for groups. Even simple questions like, "What are you doing this weekend?" carry an assumption that you have someone to do things with. Financial systems, tax structures, health insurance, emergency contact forms, they all presume you're operating as part of a unit or within an established network. You're trying to rebuild your identity inside systems that weren't designed for solo architecture. It's not just that you're dealing with internal reconstruction. You're doing it while navigating a world that treats your new reality as an exception, an inconvenience, or something temporary that you'll eventually fix by finding a replacement structure. Every interaction reinforces the feeling that you're living in a space not built for you. So you try harder. You push yourself to accept invitations, even when they feel excruciating. You force yourself to make decisions quickly because you think hesitation means you're stuck. You try to perform confidence, to show everyone, including yourself, that you're doing fine, that you're strong, that you're moving forward. But here's the trap. The more you force yourself to operate as if your identity is already rebuilt, the more you prevent the actual rebuilding from happening. Think about that house metaphor. If you pretend the renovation is complete before you've actually done the structural work, you end up building cosmetic fixes over fundamental problems. You're performing a version of yourself rather than actually reconstructing who you are. And this performance is exhausting. It takes enormous energy to maintain. Worse, it creates a growing gap between how you appear and how you actually feel, which leads to this horrible sense of fraudulence. You start believing you're fooling everyone, that any moment people will see through the act. This isn't strength. This is suppression. And suppression doesn't heal architecture. It just hides the cracks until something collapses. But here's what nobody talks about, the thing that's actually been sabotaging your reconstruction this entire time, identity compartmentalization. Without realizing it, you've been treating different aspects of your identity as if they're separate, manageable pieces. You work on your social self by accepting invitations. You address your professional self by staying productive. You handle your emotional self through therapy or journaling, and you try to figure out your future self by setting goals. But here's the problem. Your identity isn't a collection of separate components. It's an integrated system. And when that system was structured around something that's now gone, you can't rebuild it piece by piece. Every part affects every other part. When you force your social self to perform before your emotional self is ready, the dissonance destabilizes both. When you set future goals without first understanding how your decision-making process has fundamentally changed, those goals become sources of failure rather than direction. What's really happening is you're trying to renovate individual rooms without recognizing that the entire floor plan needs to be reconsidered. You're working with an old blueprint that no longer matches your reality, wondering why nothing feels right, why everything takes so much effort, why you can't seem to make the pieces fit together anymore. Until you address this, until you stop treating your identity as either something to recover or something to build in isolated pieces, you'll stay stuck in this exhausting middle ground, not fully inhabiting who you were, not able to become who you're trying to be, just existing in this half-built structure that never quite feels like home. The real work isn't about finding yourself, or adding new activities, or pushing through.
It's about understanding how to design an entirely new architecture that works for exactly one person. You, as you actually are right now, not as you were or as you think you should be. Now let me introduce you to the solo architecture method. And I want you to really sit with this for a moment. You're not half of something broken. You're not the remaining piece of a puzzle that's missing its match. You're a complete person who needs to redesign your life's architecture for one. And that's not selfish, it's survival. This is the insight that changes everything, and it's what most grief advice completely misses. Here's what typically happens after loss. You look at your life like a house that was built for two people, and you start living in just half of it. You keep making dinner for two and catching yourself. You sleep on your side of the bed, leaving the other half undisturbed, like a shrine. You avoid certain rooms entirely because they remind you too much of what was. You tiptoe through your own life, trying not to disturb the ghost of the partnership. And everyone around you thinks this is noble, this preservation of what was. But what they don't realize is that you're actually suffocating in a structure that no longer fits your reality. The traditional approach to rebuilding after loss focuses on acceptance and moving forward, and those things matter, but they skip the most crucial step. Before you can move forward, you need to completely redesign the architecture of your daily existence. Not erase what was, not pretend your past didn't happen, but actually renovate the entire house so one person can flow through every room with purpose, creating new layouts that honor the foundation while building something entirely livable for who you're becoming. This is different from traditional grief work because we're not just processing emotions here, we're actively constructing a new identity infrastructure. Think about it this way. When you were part of a couple, or when you were someone's parent with them still in your daily life, or when you had that career that defined you, your identity was load-bearing. It was holding up your sense of self. And when that structure collapsed, you didn't just lose a person or a role. You lost the framework that told you who you were, what your days should look like, what mattered, and what you were supposed to want. So the work we're doing isn't about filling a void. It's about becoming the architect of a completely redesigned life. And I'm going to teach you exactly how to do that with a framework I call Build. 5 specific steps that take you from feeling like half a person to recognizing yourself as whole, complete, and purposely designed for the life you're actually living now. Build stands for baseline, uncouple, investigate, layer, and declare. And each step is a specific construction project in rebuilding your identity architecture. Let me walk you through how this actually works. First, baseline. You need to map your current identity by listing 20 I am statements without referencing your past relationship or your old life structure. And here's why this matters so much. Right now, if I asked you who you are, you'd probably define yourself in relation to what you've lost. I'm a widow. I'm a divorced mom. I'm someone who used to run a company. I'm the person whose kid moved across the country. And all of those things are true, but they're not your identity. They're your history. Your actual identity is what exists independently, and most people after loss have no idea what that is anymore because they haven't checked in years. So you're going to sit down with a blank page and write 20 I am statements without referencing your past relationship or your old life structure. This is harder than it sounds. You'll get to about 7 statements and your mind will go blank. You'll write things like, I am tired or I'm confused. And that's fine, write those down. But keep pushing. I am someone who loves mystery novels. I am a person who feels most alive near water. I am good at making strangers feel comfortable. I am stubborn about punctuality. I am learning to cook for one. I am becoming friends with silence. What you're doing here is creating an inventory of the parts of you that survived the loss, because here's what you're going to discover. Some of who you were is still absolutely there. Maybe you're still funny. Maybe you're still analytical. Maybe you're the person who notices when someone's struggling. These are your foundation stones, the parts of the house that are still structurally sound, and you need to know what they are because you're going to build on them. But you're also going to notice something uncomfortable. Some of your I am statements are going to reveal how much you're still living in the old architecture. I am not sure what I like anymore. I am afraid to make decisions alone. I am waiting for life to feel normal again. These aren't character traits. They're symptoms of living in a house designed for two when you're the only one home. And recognizing this is actually progress, because you can't redesign what you can't see clearly. Once you have your baseline, step two is uncouple. This is where we get surgical. You're going to identify 5 daily decisions you still make through we thinking, and then you're going to consciously remake each one based solely on I want or I need. And I mean daily, ordinary decisions, not the big life stuff yet, the small architecture of your everyday existence. Let me give you examples of what this looks like. Maybe you still watch the same TV shows you watched together, even though you don't actually enjoy them anymore. That's we thinking. Maybe you still grocery shop the same way, buying things you don't eat because you're on autopilot from years of shared meals. Maybe you avoid going to certain restaurants not because you're sad, but because we never went there, and breaking that pattern feels like betrayal. Maybe you keep the thermostat at a temperature that's actually uncomfortable for you, because that's what the other person preferred. Maybe you're still decorating your home in a style that was a compromise, not your actual taste. These sound trivial, and that's exactly why they're devastating, because you're making dozens of micro decisions every day that reinforce the neural pathway of "I am incomplete." Every time you choose something based on what a partnership or old identity would have wanted, rather than what you actually want right now, you're living in the old architecture. You're keeping half the house as a shrine. So pick 5 decisions, write them down, and for each one, you're going to ask yourself a radically simple question. What do I, as a complete individual person living my actual current life, want or need? Not what would be honoring to the past, not what would make sense to other people. What do I want? And then you're going to do that thing. You're going to change the channel. You're going to go to the restaurant alone. You're going to adjust the thermostat. You're going to put up that painting that's entirely your taste, even if it clashes with everything else. This feels selfish at first. It feels wrong. You'll have moments where you think, "This is silly. What does it matter what temperature my house is?" But here's what's actually happening. You're practicing sovereignty. You're rebuilding the neural pathways that say, "I am someone whose preferences matter, whose individual existence is valid, who can make choices based on my own needs." You're teaching yourself that you don't need permission from your past to live in your present. Step 3 is investigate, and this is where we start adding new rooms to the house. You're going to choose 1 new experience every week that your coupled self or old identity never would have tried, and you're gathering data here, not making permanent changes. You're exploring who you might be without the constraint of comparison. This doesn't mean forcing yourself to become someone you're not. It means trying things without the filter of, "Would we have liked this?" or "Is this something a person like me does?" Maybe you go to a sound bath, or a boxing class, or a lecture on astronomy. Maybe you eat dinner at the bar instead of at a table. Maybe you take yourself to a movie in the middle of a Tuesday afternoon. Maybe you strike up a conversation with someone at the farmer's market. Maybe you drive a different route home just to see what you notice. The point isn't to love everything you try. The point is to stop living inside the boundaries of an identity that no longer exists. Because here's what happened. When you were coupled or when you had that old identity, you made thousands of small decisions about who you were based on the dynamic of partnership or role. You said no to things not because you didn't want them, but because we're not those kind of people. You said yes to things not because they lit you up, but because they fit the image of who you were together. And now that old architecture is gone, but you're still operating inside its phantom walls. You're still saying, "I'm not someone who does that," based on a version of yourself that was shaped by a relationship or role that's over. You have no idea what you might actually enjoy or who you might become because you haven't tested it. You're living with assumptions that haven't been updated. So every week, try one thing, just one, and pay attention to what happens in your body, not whether you're good at it, not whether it's something you'll do again, but how it feels to move through the world as someone discovering rather than someone grieving. You're collecting data points about your actual preferences, your actual energy, your actual emerging identity.
You're investigating who you are when you're not defined by who you were with someone else. Step 4 is layer, and this is where the method gets sophisticated. You're going to keep one meaningful ritual from your past while adding one new personal tradition each month. Both, not either or. This is how you build a life that honors both chapters instead of trying to choose between them. Here's why this matters. Most people after loss do one of two extremes. Either they cling to everything from the past, keeping every ritual and tradition exactly the same, turning their life into a museum, or they burn it all down, getting rid of everything that reminds them of what was, trying to outrun their history. And both approaches fail, because you can't build a stable identity on either extreme. The museum approach keeps you frozen. You have Sunday morning coffee the exact same way you always did, but now it's painful instead of pleasant. You celebrate holidays with the same traditions, but they feel hollow because you're performing them for an audience that's no longer there. You're living in a shrine, and shrines aren't designed for actual living. The scorched earth approach leaves you untethered. You move to a new city, get rid of all the photos, refuse to talk about the past, and try to become someone completely different. But you can't build an identity on negation. You can't define yourself only by what you're not. And you end up feeling disconnected from your own history, like you're playing a character instead of being a person. Layering is the third option. You keep something real from your past, one ritual or tradition that actually still brings you meaning, not obligation. Maybe it's the Sunday morning coffee, but you change one thing about it. You drink it outside now, or you add a new pastry from a different bakery, or you write in your journal while you drink it. You're keeping the thread of continuity, but you're weaving it into a new pattern. And then you add something entirely new. A monthly tradition that belongs only to this chapter of your life. Maybe you take yourself out for a solo dinner on the first Friday of every month. Maybe you start hosting a potluck for other single people. Maybe you visit a new hiking trail or art gallery or bookstore. Maybe you have a monthly phone call with someone who's also rebuilding their identity. It doesn't matter what it is. What matters is that you're deliberately constructing new traditions that reflect who you're becoming, not just maintaining old ones that reflect who you were. This is how you build a house that's livable. You don't gut it completely, losing all sense of history and foundation, and you don't leave it exactly as it was, trying to inhabit a space designed for a different life. You layer. You honor what was, while building what is. And over time, you end up with a life that feels like it has depth and continuity and purpose, a life that acknowledges your whole story while being designed for your current reality. Step 5 is declare, and this is where you make it official. You're going to write your solo identity statement,
3 sentences about who you are now and what you stand for as a complete individual. And then you're going to share it, even if that sharing is just with yourself or one trusted person. This isn't a mission statement or goal list. It's a declaration of your current identity architecture. It's you saying out loud, "This is who I am as a complete person, not as half of something that ended." And it includes 3 elements: who you are, what matters to you, and how you're showing up in the world. Here's what this might sound like. I am someone who's learning that solitude and loneliness are different things, and I'm building a life where I genuinely enjoy my own company. What matters to me now is authenticity over comfort, even when that means disappointing people who want me to stay the same. I'm showing up as someone who's under construction, not broken, and I'm making decisions that honor both my past and my future. Or this: I am a complete person who carries loss without being defined by it. What matters to me is building connections based on who I actually am, not who I used to be. I'm showing up with the courage to let people see me as I am now, uncertain and growing and whole. The words don't matter. What matters is that you're claiming an identity that isn't dependent on your old life structure. You're declaring yourself as someone who exists independently, fully, purposefully. And sharing this, even just writing it down and reading it to yourself out loud, changes something. It makes your new identity real. It takes it from a private hope to a public fact. Now let's talk about what's going to try to stop you from doing this work. Because the obstacles here aren't about capability, they're about permission. The first thing you're going to feel is guilt. You're going to worry that redesigning your life means you didn't love deeply enough, or that you're betraying your past. You're going to have moments where choosing what you want feels impossibly selfish. And I need you to hear this. Rebuilding your identity isn't erasure. You can honor what was while building what is. These aren't opposing forces. A house that's been renovated still has its original foundation. The love you had, the life you built, the person you were, all of that is still part of your structure. You're not demolishing it. You're making it livable, for one. The second obstacle is other people's discomfort with your reconstruction. Friends and family often want you to get better, but they don't actually want you to change. They want you to return to some version of your old self, just without the sadness. And when you start making different choices, trying new things, building new traditions, they're going to say things like, "You're not acting like yourself," or "Are you sure you should be making big changes right now?" What they mean is, your growth is making them uncomfortable because it's forcing them to update their image of you, and that's work they don't want to do. Your job isn't to make your reconstruction convenient for spectators. Your job is to build a life you can actually live in. The third obstacle is the fear that if you build a life designed for one, you're somehow closing the door on future connection. That if you get too comfortable being complete alone, you won't be able to partner again, or let people in, or adapt to new relationships. This is backward. The people who can't connect in the future are the ones who stay half a person, waiting to be completed by someone else. When you do this work, when you build a life that's fully yours, you become someone who can connect from wholeness rather than need. You become someone who chooses relationship as an addition to your life, not a rescue from it. And that's actually when the best connections happen. So, why does this method work when other approaches don't? Because it operates on architecture, not just emotion. Feelings are important, and processing grief is necessary, but you can't think your way into a new identity. You have to build it, decision by decision, experience by experience, layer by layer. The solo architecture method gives you a construction plan. It takes the overwhelming question of "Who am I now?" and turns it into specific, actionable projects. Map your baseline, uncouple your decisions, investigate new experiences, layer old and new, declare your identity. These aren't abstract concepts, they're concrete steps, and every time you complete one, you're literally building new neural pathways that say, "I am whole, I am complete, I am capable of designing a life that's entirely mine." This works because it acknowledges the truth that most rebuilding advice ignores. You're not trying to get back to who you were. That person was built for a different life. You're building someone new, and that requires actual construction, not just emotional processing. You're the architect now. And the house you're building? It's going to be entirely, purposefully, beautifully designed for the person you're becoming. So we've mapped the territory together. You understand the solo architecture method. You've seen how identity reconstruction works, how to separate what's yours from what was shared, how to reclaim your autonomy without betraying your history. Now comes the part that matters most, building the life that proves you were never half a person to begin with. And I want you to start right now. Yes, right now, while you're still listening to these words. I want you to notice where you are in this moment. Are you driving, walking, sitting in a room that still holds memories? Whatever your answer, I want you to say out loud, "I am whole right now." Say it even if you don't fully believe it yet. Say it especially if you don't believe it, because your brain needs to hear your voice claiming this truth. The intentional architect you're becoming speaks their reality into existence before they can fully see it. Today, in the next few hours, you're going to do your first piece of actual architecture work. You're going to identify one small decision you've been avoiding because it feels too trivial or too significant, too selfish or too symbolic. Maybe it's what to do with the furniture arrangement in your living room. Maybe it's whether to accept that dinner invitation. Maybe it's as simple as what to make for dinner when you're only cooking for yourself. Choose one decision and make it purely based on what you actually want, not what feels loyal or safe or like what someone else would choose. This isn't about making the perfect choice. It's about exercising the muscle of autonomous decision-making. Make the choice, then notice how it feels to have chosen from wholeness rather than absence.
Tomorrow, you're going to build on that foundation. Tomorrow morning, before you do anything else, you're going to spend 5 minutes with the identity inventory exercise we discussed. Write down three things. One aspect of your old shared identity you're still carrying that no longer serves you. One authentic preference you've been suppressing. And one small way you'll honor both your past and your present today. This becomes your morning practice. Your daily act of conscious architecture. It doesn't need to be long or elaborate. 5 minutes of intentional design work creates more transformation than hours of anxious rumination. Over the rest of this first week, days 2 through 7, you're going to practice the provisional self experiment. Each day, you'll try one small thing differently. Eat breakfast at a different time, take a new route, say yes to something you'd normally decline, or no to something you'd normally accept out of obligation. Rearrange one shelf. Listen to music you've never explored. The content matters less than the practice of experimentation itself. You're training yourself to approach your life as a design space, not a monument to what was. By day 7, you'll have 7 small data points about who you are when you give yourself permission to explore. And here's what I want you to envision for day 30. 30 days from now, you'll wake up and realize you made 3 decisions the day before without consulting the ghost of your old life. You'll notice you've stopped asking, "Is this allowed?" and started asking, "Is this mine?" You'll have at least one area of your life, maybe small, but entirely real, that reflects your authentic architecture. Maybe it's a room you've finally made yours. Maybe it's a friendship you've deepened. Maybe it's simply that you've stopped apologizing for taking up space in your own existence. 30 days from now, when someone asks how you are, you won't immediately perform the role of the person who's coping. You'll just be the person who's living. This audiobook will be here when you need to return to it, and you will need to return, not because you failed, but because building a life is ongoing work, not a single renovation. Each time you listen, you'll hear something new, because you'll be someone new, the intentional architect further along in their design work.
You were never half a person. You were always whole. What you lost was real, and what you're building now is equally real. Both can be true. Both are true. Now go design accordingly.